Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
ECISD gets challenge grant for broadband by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD has received a $50,000 grant from the Chiefs for Change organization to fund broadband internet access for local families. The challenge grant will fund access for 263 families during the next 14 months through June 30th, 2021. It's a challenge grant, so we're working on some local organizations and philanthropists to match that. We already have a couple of others that have expressed strong interest, so in the coming days, I may be adding names and dollar amounts to this. But each $50,000 is another 263 families, Superintendent Scott Murray said in a phone interview. Again, it's free broadband, all of the tools and resources you need for the next 14 months. He added that the coronavirus pandemic has brought out the best in the community, and they recognize that many kids, not only in our area but across the country, do not have access to broadband, and it's a real crisis right now for many kids. The learning has stopped the moment they went home, Murray said. The district has been able to provide printed packets and digital content, but the lack of broadband access can create equity issues. He said the district wants to do the best it can to bridge that gap, and this is one way to do that. We're excited about this grant, Murray said. It's great for our families. I know that we're going to have some other big announcements in the coming days, and we'll be adding to this number. But it's a big win for our community and especially our families. 55% of families in ECISD live in poverty, he said. Of those families, a percentage do not have broadband access. So Murray said those will be the families who are targeted for this opportunity and families who don't have access to broadband today. ECISD will be working with Sparklight as the local provider. More information will be forthcoming on our website. This announcement just happened today, Wednesday, so it's breaking news, if you will. But we want to make sure our families are aware, so we'll provide guidance to our families and let them know how to access this information. But we hope to begin to activate accounts the 1st of May. Although it is a 14-month program, Murray said it's still temporary, and the district is also looking at a long-term solution, which will come in conjunction with other organizations. Part of the district's yet-to-be-launched strategic plan is providing broadband access to every family in ECISD. We're working with the city and the county right now to explore the construction of our own LTE, long-term evolution network, Murray said. The district also is working to complete a fiber installation this summer that is meant to provide that access. Murray said they also want to work with the city and county on providing access. Chiefs for Change, he said, is a group of superintendents and state-level education leaders who share thoughts and information. Murray said it's about a 50-50 mix of district and state leaders. We gather together once a year and convene for a full day, Murray said. Our topics are specifically focused on how to improve the current state of education. We chat regularly during this crisis. We've been virtually gathering multiple times a week to talk about different topics and issues related to the current crisis. It's a great think tank, a good group of thought partners for me, especially as a superintendent, to hear what's happening across our country, both at the district level and at the state level. We share ideas, thoughts, and information. It's a professional learning community, if you will, for school system leaders. Local news roundup. Man charged with sexually assaulting girlfriend's daughter. A 29-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly sexually assaulted his girlfriend's daughter. Ismael Jesus Diaz, Jr., was charged with sexual assault of a child, a second-degree felony. Odessa Police Department officers were dispatched around 11:15 a.m. Sunday to Fitch Avenue, an OPD affidavit stated. Diaz was reportedly read his Miranda warning and agreed to answer officers' questions. He stated that his girlfriend's daughter had got into his bed with him sometime in the morning. He stated that he assumed it was his girlfriend, who was also in the bed at the same time. Diaz stated he remembered her getting out of bed and later received a text message from his girlfriend's daughter stating, "How could you do that?" Diaz reportedly verbally admitted that if he did sexually assault his girlfriend's daughter, that it was mistakenly done as he thought it was his girlfriend, but couldn't remember due to him not being able to recall his nightmare he was having. When the officer asked Diaz what his girlfriend's daughter was accusing him of, he stated she accused him of penetrating her digitally. Diaz's girlfriend's daughter stated to officers that Diaz grabbed her buttocks and penetrated her digitally. He was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $25,000, and he posted bail Tuesday, jail records show. Woman charged with assaulting security guard while stealing groceries. A woman was arrested after she reportedly assaulted a security guard while stealing more than $100 worth of merchandise from a grocery store. Kirsten Paige Atkinson, 26, was charged with robbery, a second-degree felony. She also had a failure to appear for a possession of marijuana charge, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported robbery happened at 8:03 p.m. Tuesday at Market Street, 4950 East 42nd, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Atkinson was reportedly detained by Arturo Hurado, an asset protection officer employed by Market Street. Hurado stated that Atkinson crossed all points of sale with $104.93 worth of Market Street property without making an attempt to pay for the items. Hurado stated that when he tried to detain Atkinson, she attempted to get away and caused bleeding injuries to his forearms and left hand. Atkinson was reportedly read her Miranda rights and waived her rights. She stated that she had intended to steal the merchandise and that she knew she had hurt Hurado while attempting to get away from him. Atkinson was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She has two bonds totaling $20,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon, jail records show. Catholic High School Goes Virtual by Ruth Campbell. In a way, it was lucky that Holy Cross Catholic High School had a couple of snow days in February to try out online instruction. That, plus the school's small size and figuring out what went right and wrong over those bad weather days, enabled the school to jump right into the virtual world. The school has 22 students and 10 staff members, including head of school Carolyn Gonzalez, and everyone has a laptop. We've been remote teaching and learning since the 16th of March. We just moved everything online. We had done this when the snow dates hit, Gonzalez said. We went ahead and planned for that before we left for the weekend, so we did remote learning those 2 days that the other schools closed. We got feedback from our students and then our teachers. We met with our teachers and determined what worked, what didn't work, what we needed to fix, and found that some laptops needed different software installed, and then we prepared for the event that we would have to do it again. We thought it would be for a bad weather day, not anticipating a pandemic, but it served us well. We were ready. We had a good response when it happened for the snow days, so parents and students were familiar with it, and it was easy to get into. It hasn't been a hard transition, and we're a small school, so we're able to troubleshoot and work quickly. We have a technology specialist who works with us, and we do drop off and pickups at the school. So I'll go pick up a laptop from a student and take it to the school, and then she'll come back, pick it up and fix it, and we'll have her maybe take it to the student and get them back up and running, Gonzalez said. We just kind of work together and coordinate those things that happen. Things are going to break. Things don't always work. Thankfully, our parents have been very good to us, and our students are at school every day, she added. 15-year-old sophomore Gabby Estrada has had practice taking online courses since she has taken dual credit classes. It wasn't too much of a difference, she said. She added that the students already had a foundation because of the snow days. Monday through Thursday, they have classes, and Friday is an advisory period where if a student needs help in a particular subject, they can go virtually to that class. So that really helps out, Estrada said. One of the drawbacks is that she misses seeing her friends and teachers in person. But at least I get to see them. We do Zoom, so I visit with them there and talk and interact. It's really nice, she said. I never thought this would happen, or at least get this bad, but we just continue on. We're still doing school. We're going to complete our 2020 school year, so we're excited. I do miss socializing with my friends. Evelina Estrada, Gabby's mother, said having that online class her first semester really helped her daughter. I think it would have been last year, it would have been much more complicated for her, but she has done a very smooth transfer into this staying-at-home learning, Evelina Estrada said. Evelina added that they have gotten great support from the staff at each of her children's schools. This online learning classroom, it's kind of a wake-up call for a lot of people, and this might be the future of mass education. We're still learning, just in a different style, Gabby said. Gonzalez said while Holy Cross doesn't have a help desk, they use Remind and Ring Central, where a parent can call, text, or email to let the school know there is a technical problem. They contact me or the technology person. She then remotes into the laptop and finds out what it is. If she can fix it remotely, she'll remote in, fix it, and they're good. If not, then we work on a designated place that we can pick up and have them drop off, and we grab it and we work together to get it back to the students or get them a loaner until we have that one fixed, Gonzalez said. Religious instruction is still part of the curriculum. She just finished her chapel group on a recent Monday morning. That was very important to all of us, is that we keep our faith first. We didn't lose our Catholic identity because of the pandemic, so we start every morning with chapel, and we have a lesson. Our theology person, who is also our campus ministry person, gives us our lessons for the week, Gonzalez said. Sometimes there are small groups and sometimes whole groups. Sometimes Father Timothy Hayter will lead a session with them. It just depends on where we are and what we're doing. But our theology is one of our mandatory core classes, and chapel is every morning. We're just trying to teach school as normal as we can. Different location, but same school, she said. The school is currently located at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church in Odessa, but it will ultimately move to Midland. This is its first school year. She added that she has been impressed with the teacher's ability to adapt to virtual teaching and learning. God does provide. I tell everybody God knew what he was doing with the snow days because he gave us a perfect opportunity to try this and get feedback and know what we were doing right and know what we're doing wrong. This happened, and we were having to do this long term. So God has a plan. We just believe that we're going to be back to celebrate at least one day before the year ends. It's very important to us. It's our first year, so they want to be together one more time as our first year class. But if that doesn't happen, we'll come back in the fall and, God willing, be back together again, Gonzalez said. The Holy Cross team meets every day after school to debrief through Zoom and talk not only about school, but life in general. The counselor reaches out to ensure everybody is okay. I'm on camera every day talking to kids, looking at them virtually. We're all dedicated to making sure we reach out to our students weekly. Every student, not just academics, but every student is reached out. Families are reached out by one of us every day for the week, and so we call our kids on Zoom and we talk to them, and they reach out to us, and they just want to say hello, Gonzalez said. It's different, but definitely doable. Definitely doable. Gardening Business Booms During Pandemic by Michael Bauer. Michael Ruiz and Erica Camacho had always talked about doing more gardening, but could never find the time needed to get started. That hasn't been much of an issue now due to COVID-19. With disruptions going on around the globe because of the virus, some people are finding themselves with added time on their hands, and that has allowed them to focus more on yard work. We've always talked about it, Ruiz said. We've always wanted to make stuff ourselves. We've always been mediocre at prep. She does a lot of couponing and stuff, and we've always kept our shelves stocked. And with everything going on, it makes you think about being prepared. Ruiz, who previously worked in the oil fields, will be taking a few weeks off before he starts his next job. We'll be aiming to use the added time to start planting some vegetables. I'm looking at doing some gardening and planting some vegetables around the house, Ruiz said. Among the vegetables he aims to grow are jalapenos and tomatoes. I made some salsa the other day at my house with some jalapenos that I had gotten from a curbside order, and they were not hot at all, Ruiz said. While Ruiz and Camacho are starting from scratch on their garden, they said the challenge has been fun. We've been able to spend some time together, Ruiz said. Some people say it's boring, but we're finding things to do. We're staying busy. For gardening and landscaping nurseries, business has lately been well due to the increased demand, especially with vegetables. There's a lot of extra work involved with having to do curbside deliveries and everything, said La Casa Verde nursery owner Rick French. It doubles the workload. Business is booming in the vegetable department. Tomatoes, peppers, all of them are just running out the door. As a matter of fact, we're having a hard time trying to get them due to availability. For French, the big volume of what his business has been selling the most of lately is fruit and vegetable seeds. We've tripled our order on vegetable seeds this year, French said. Our vegetables and plants, they're all just booming. And soil. We're selling a lot more soil, too. People are just doing a lot more gardening this year. It's been crazy. The increased time that most people have gained due to staying at home because of the coronavirus has been one major reason for the increase in demand at nurseries, but French added that another reason for the boom has been from people wanting to be more self-reliant in the face of a pandemic. The idea that they couldn't buy some food for a while, they've put it in their heads that they need to be a little more self-sufficient, French said. They have time to do it. What really excites me is that I'm seeing a lot of family getting their kids involved. I have been trying for years to get parents and grandparents to get their kids involved in gardening. This is not maybe the way I planned or wanted it to happen, but it is working. French, who owns both La Casa Verde nursery locations, with one in Midland and the other in Odessa, says he hasn't had to lay off or furlough any employees. While some Odessa residents are gardening for the first time, others have been doing it for a while now. Luis Tijerina, who's lived in Odessa for 61 years, has filled his backyard with a series of plants and has described it as his own sanctuary. "I use it for praying and meditating," Tijerina said. "I watch the sunset and I watch the hummingbirds come and feed. All of the stuff out here has been picked up and supplied by Lowe's, and everything I have here I build and put together with friends and relatives." Tijerina, who works as a computer technician, has seen his hours get cut down to 16 hours a week. "But I've been through a couple of downturns before here in West Texas," he said. "I know what to expect." While he's had more time to work in his yard, he still managed to maintain it before COVID-19. "Even when I was working my regular schedule, my evenings were spent out here, and that would make for a really long day, but now I have more time to work out here during the day and still get the things needed to get done," Tijerina said. "But it's a quiet and relaxing evening when I do come out here." He says he has up to 71 plants. "Plus, I do have potatoes and carrots that went directly into the soil. I have a flower bed that is going to be wildflowers and sunflowers. It also has a Western theme to it. I'll have sand and cactus." As far as his advice to people who are trying to get started gardening, Tijerina says the best thing is to do what you feel and plant what you like to see. "Look through magazines, look through the internet and other people's gardens and see if it's something that you would like to see in your place," Tijerina said. "Then do the research and see what it takes to get started. Personally, for me, it's everything that I like to see. If you don't have a green thumb, find it, because everybody can do it. You just need to know how." Death notices for Friday, April 17th. Lou Ann Garrett Allen. Lou Ann Garrett Allen, 78, of Odessa, died Thursday, April 16th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Mark E. Thomason. Mark E. Thomason, 55, of Leesburg, Florida, died Tuesday, April 7th, in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Beth Descalier Thomason. Beth Descalier Thomason, 62, of Leesburg, Florida, died Tuesday, April 7th, in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Jerry Lynn Young. Jerry Lynn Young, 58, of Midland, died Tuesday, April 14th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
The Political Page. Opinion Extra from Ben Shapiro, Creator Syndicate. It's foolish to ignore path to reopening society. As our national lockdown drags on, Americans seem less and less inclined to move swiftly towards societal reopening. Perhaps that's because of the consistent media focus on the risks of reopening. Perhaps it's also because of the psychological comfort of the status quo. When we've been made to feel safe in our home, it's difficult to leave. Or perhaps we as a society have so fundamentally altered our own perception of risk aversion that we aren't willing to leave our houses unless the risk is close to zero. Whatever the reason, it is simply untenable to lock Americans down for months more. Calls to do so ignore not only the catastrophic human suffering inflicted on millions, employees who no longer have jobs, children who can no longer attend school, entrepreneurs who have seen their life's dreams and savings destroyed at the behest of the government, but the reality of economics, which is that government cannot interminably pay everyone to stay at home. Furthermore, long-term lockdowns do not even prevent the virus from eventually second-wave spreading. When we emerge from our homes, we will pass the virus to one another again. So how should we view the risks of reopening our society? Rationally. This means that we should stop looking at false case fatality rates as inevitabilities. We simply don't know how many Americans have had coronavirus or how many have it now. We do know that the number of confirmed cases is far lower than the number of cases in society more broadly. In New York, the supposed case fatality rate, the number of deaths from coronavirus over the number of confirmed cases, rests at around 5%. But between March 22nd and April 4th, 215 pregnant women were screened for COVID-19 in New York City, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. 4 women had symptoms of COVID-19, and 29 tested positive despite being asymptomatic. This means 13.7% of those women had COVID-19 without knowing it. For every symptomatic woman, there were 7 others who were asymptomatic but positive. If applied statewide, a simplistic model, but certainly one that would be closer to accuracy than mere confirmed cases, this would drop the case fatality rate from 5% to 0.7%. Needless to say, such a statistic would alleviate some worry, particularly among less vulnerable populations. We should also stop treating all cohorts of American society as equally vulnerable to coronavirus. According to 2 New York University studies, the first most predictive condition for hospitalization was age. Almost half of all coronavirus patients hospitalized in New York City were over 65. The next most predictive condition was obesity, and more than 70% of hospital coronavirus patients had a chronic condition. This should be no surprise. As of April 12th, the New York City Health Department reported 128 fatalities among people with no underlying conditions, and just 26 deaths among people under 45 with no underlying conditions. There were 42,524 diagnosed cases of COVID-19 for New Yorkers under 45, meaning that the case fatality rate, again, a seriously high-end estimate, given the fact that asymptomatic people have not been tested, for those with no underlying health conditions below age 45 is 0.06%. In other words, 9,994 out of every 10,000 young, healthy people who get coronavirus will not die, and the number is likely higher than that. This means that we should be looking to send young, healthy people back to work and urging social distancing and isolation for those who are elderly or have pre-existing conditions that raise coronavirus risks. We should retain social distancing for the young and healthy, urge mask wearing, and perform contact tracing when hotspots arise. We should continue to avoid large-scale gatherings. We should urge special vigilance in high-density areas. Localism is our friend here, but there is a path toward reopening. To ignore it isn't just foolish, it's counterproductive.
Hello, this is Michael again. I'm reading a story from the front page of Friday, April 17th's Midland Reporter Telegram. Oil price collapse is taking down service companies, by David Withy, Bloomberg. No one is feeling the pain of an oil collapse more than shale producers, except perhaps their suppliers. Take Stacy Locke, Chief Executive Officer for Pioneer Energy Services Corporation. Locke says he had no choice but to abandon drilling in the Bakken Shale Basin after roughly 20 years there as plunging oil prices slashed activity, and a major customer in the region, Whiting Petroleum Corporation, went bankrupt. The end result of a tough year for oil. Pioneer will lose the last 6 rigs it has in the Bakken, with each one ending jobs for 20 or so workers. Since the start of 2019, the oil field services sector has lost almost 50,000 jobs, or about 13% of its workforce. Meanwhile, the fall-off in fracturing is forecast to face its worst year ever, with at least half of all work expected to be ended by July 1st, according to Citigroup Incorporated. The domino effect for workers across a wide spectrum of companies can be devastating, said Skip Locken, Pioneer's vice president of drilling operations. There are so many different companies that are involved in drilling one well, said Lockett. A North Dakota native who's worked with Whiting as a client for a dozen years. It comes down to the person that brings water out to employees on the rig, or toilet paper, paper towels, oil, gas, cement, or who do the fracking and the logging. Contractors hired to map underground pockets of oil, drill new wells, and open them are expected to be among the hardest hit in the energy industry as producers slam on the brakes to survive a crude price crash triggered by a demand-destroying pandemic and a battle for market share between Saudi Arabia and Russia. Although the world's biggest producers agreed to a global output cut last weekend, it hasn't been enough to boost prices from the doldrums. It's just terribly painful, said Locke, whose own company filed for Chapter 11 restructuring in March, about a month before Whiting's move. When the big ones fall, that's really pretty catastrophic. Whiting's bankruptcy filing alone has undercut rig operators, water haulers, chemical providers, and other contractors, large and small. 4 of the world's biggest servicers are each owed more than $1 million, with Schlumberger Limited and Halliburton Company carrying unsecured claims of more than $8 million each. Investors will get their first look at the first quarter financial damage today, Friday, when Schlumberger, the world's biggest oil services provider, reports earnings. Halliburton and Baker Hughes Company will follow next week. On Monday, Baker Hughes announced it will write down $15 billion in value from 2 of its biggest business units. That followed announcements over the past month from rivals Schlumberger and Halliburton of furloughs, salary reductions, and job cuts. After averaging less than 3 bankruptcies a quarter for all of 2018 and the first half of 2019, the oil field services sector finally hit its debt wall, according to Haynes and Boone LLP. Now the hired hands of the oil patch are averaging more than 8 filings over each of the past 3 quarters. I think we're going to have quite a few bankruptcies this go-around, Locke said by telephone. Our experience in the Bakken, after 15 to 20 years up there, is probably over for drilling, which is really, really sad. To combat that, some explorers, such as Parsley Energy Incorporated, have asked their contractors to help them cut as much as 25% from their oil field costs. But industry consultant Rystad Energy estimates that explorers may only be able to get about half that, with so little for the servicers to give up this time around. The last time that oil prices tanked from more than $100 a barrel in 2014 to roughly $26 in 2016, service companies gave up major concessions to their customers, partly to keep market share. Now, companies such as Patterson-UTI Energy Incorporated and RPC Incorporated are working from a new playbook, scrapping excess frac pumps for the first time ever, turning instead to idle gear in a pinch. When a pump breaks, I drag the truck off to the side and I go grab another one that was working last time I had it on a job, put it in line, and run that till it breaks. Richard Spears, an industry consultant who's worked in and around the oil patch for decades, said on a recent Evercore ISI webinar. You can do this incredible discounting as long as you've got idle equipment that was in good shape, he said. But eventually, you burn through even all that. From the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, April 16th. Texas regulators might not know how to cut oil production. By Mitchell Furman, Texas Tribune. Facing a steep drop in oil demand with much of the world staying at home to practice social distancing, more than 55 energy executives, analysts, and critics appeared one after another Tuesday at a video meeting of the Texas agency that regulates the oil and gas industry to weigh in on a request that the state's oil production be cut. Some oil producers asked the Texas Railroad Commission for such a cap. Others said regulators should not get involved in determining oil production, even during the novel coronavirus's parallel public health and economic crises. And a few speakers who testified took a neutral position but provided their thoughts on industry matters anyway. If we are forced to prorate, we are going to cease all activity right away, testified Kays Vant Hoff, chief financial officer of Houston-based Diamondback Energy, a company that focuses primarily on the Permian Basin. He said a move to cut oil production directly impacts the employment of almost 3,000 people. Texas has not cut oil production since the 1970s, but the unprecedented plunge in oil demand has led to a split among industry leaders about how to fix the issue as the global economy has come to a halt and more than 16 million Americans are out of work, including at least 760,000 Texans. Commission Chairman Wayne Christian and Commissioners Christy Craddock and Ryan Sitton were nowhere near making a decision about cuts Tuesday, but they can draw ideas from more than 10 hours of testimony. Should the three elected officials implement production cuts to level the playing field? Should the commission exempt small producers from a cut while having large producers pay the price? Should the state stay out of the way and allow the market to drive companies' decision-making? Scott Sheffield, the CEO of Irving-based Pioneer Natural Resources, is in favor of curbing oil output in Texas in this unprecedented moment, saying that it's about fairness. To further illustrate his point, Sheffield says there's a need for some oil industry oversight after years of energy companies borrowing risky money to finance expansion. No one wants to give us capital because we have all destroyed capital and created economic waste, Sheffield said of the shale industry. Some longtime oil executives like Don Sparks, who said he entered the industry in 1962, became something of a guide for the three elected railroad commissioners who weren't in the business the last time the state commission was involved in pro-rationing. With the amount of oil and gas production available in Texas today, we should be involved in the balancing of the supply and demand to again prevent the waste of valuable Texas resources, said Sparks of Discovery Operating in Midland. Proration should signal Texas's willingness to help balance that market. Craddock acknowledged the inexperience when she asked an oil industry veteran who had worked in production cuts before the 1970s. We don't know how to do it at the agency anymore, Craddock said. Do we start on January 1st? Where do we start? How do we start? Christian also acknowledged that some Republican lawmakers, including State Senator Paul Bettencourt of Houston and State Representatives Charlie Green of Fort Worth and Lyle Larson of San Antonio, said they opposed proration. On Sunday, a large group of oil-producing countries, including Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the United States, agreed to cut 9.7 million barrels of oil per day from the global oil market after the Saudis flooded the market with oil earlier this year. The price of oil has barely budged since the weekend's historic agreement, and West Texas Intermediate crude cost around $21 a barrel Tuesday. Analysts have said more cuts will be needed to keep pace with the devastating drop in demand, the ripple effects of which Texas oil producers are already feeling. It's a crushing loss for the state's largest industry, one that funds significant portions of the state's budget. There were more than 360,000 jobs tied to oil and gas in 2019, according to the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. While the coronavirus pandemic spurs an abnormal downturn in an industry familiar with peaks and valleys, some speakers said Tuesday that this is an opportunity to get a handle on harmful oil-producing practices such as flaring. To put it simply, the current boom and bust cycle is not sustainable, said Cyrus Reed, conservation director of the Sierra Club's Lone Star chapter. The Railroad Commission needs to drastically limit permits that allow oil producers to flare literally hundreds of millions of cubic feet of gas, not to mention hundreds of millions more through unlit flares, vents, and fugitive emissions. If the Railroad Commission only permitted production when gas can be captured and used, rather than burned off, production would be reduced, which would help stabilize prices and clean up our air. It's ultimately unclear what an oil output quota would look like and how it would be enforced. Some oil producers encouraged commissioners to collaborate with other states, such as Oklahoma. State regulators there Tuesday agreed to hold a meeting May 11th, similar to Texas's Tuesday meeting. Late Tuesday, Christian said that over 20,000 people tuned into the public meeting. Craddock tweeted that people from 86 countries and 49 states watched. "Our industry may be split on what to do," Christian said in a statement, "but they are united that something must be done to stabilize the worldwide price of crude oil." Christian said the commissioners will deliberate and reconvene in the near future. Craddock, who has not indicated what her decision will be, said during the meeting that she was not sure how they would go about enforcing oil production cuts. "And we don't know if we can manage it," Craddock said. James Mann, who spoke Tuesday on behalf of the Texas Pipeline Association, said he's old enough to remember when the State Commission focused on prorationing. "Just about everyone at the Commission back then generally understood how it worked," Mann said. "They're all dead now." Disclosure: the Sierra Club and the Texas Pipeline Association have been financial supporters of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. U.S. says oil tariffs still on the table, by Stephen Cunningham, Bloomberg. U.S. tariffs on oil imports haven't been dismissed even after the latest OPEC Plus supply deal, according to a senior U.S. government official. President Donald Trump previously wielded the threat of tariffs on shipments from Saudi Arabia and Russia if a deal wasn't reached, and this option hasn't been entirely removed from the equation, said Francis Fanon, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Energy Resources. That signals the U.S. wants to ensure that the cuts are actually implemented. "It continues to be something that's on the table," Fanon said on a call on Wednesday. "It's certainly something the president had weighed, but he consistently said it wasn't a lever he didn't think he would need to pull. A global oversupply of oil will take time to be unwound, even after the recent decision by the world's biggest producers to enact unprecedented production cuts," Fanon said. "There's going to be a latency in terms of the supply buildup and how that works its way out." What we're talking about is huge stores of a physical commodity that have amassed over time. Fanon spoke just days after Trump helped broker a deal whereby OPEC Plus agreed to slash production by almost 10% to resuscitate a market reeling from coronavirus-related lockdowns and a damaging price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But with global demand estimates being revised down, most recently by the International Energy Agency on Wednesday, that's raised concern that the cuts are too little, too late, and oil has fallen back to an 18-year low in New York. In the U.S., companies are already cutting back on spending and idling rigs in what Trump has referred to as automatic cuts in response to the market slowdown rather than any mandated reductions. The entire shale revolution, as it were, was based out of the private sector and responding to the market, Fanon said. I have every confidence that the private sector will respond in the opposite direction. Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read another article from the front page of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, April 16th. Energy. Dark days in the oil patch. Oil falls to 18-year low after record collapse. By Robert Tuttle, Bloomberg. Oil plunged to the lowest in two decades amid a record collapse in U.S. fuel demand and the biggest ever weekly build in domestic crude prices. Futures in New York settled below $20 a barrel for the first time since 2002. American gasoline consumption dropped to 0.2 million barrels, according to the Energy Information Administration. The government report underscored an earlier forecast by the Paris-based International Energy Administration, which warned that even OPEC Plus's historic production cuts can't counter the epic demand decline caused by the coronavirus pandemic. While Saudi Arabia and other Middle East producers have pledged to cut supply starting next month, they continue to flood the market in April. Meanwhile, U.S. oil production has declined only marginally. Whatever production that we are cutting back is not going to offset the demand destruction, said Stephen Schork, president of the energy consultancy Schork Group Incorporated. The oil glut is looking so severe that the Trump administration is considering paying U.S. oil producers to leave crude in the ground. Oil demand will drop by over 9 million barrels a day this year, wiping out a decade of consumption growth, the IEA said, exhausting storage by mid-year. Consumption in April is expected to fall by almost a third to the lowest level since 1995, making this year the worst in the history of the oil market. Despite OPEC Plus's efforts, global inventories will accumulate by 12 million barrels a day in the first half of the year and overwhelm the logistics of the oil industry in the coming weeks, the Paris-based agency warned. West Texas Intermediate fell 24 cents to $19.87 a barrel at the close of trading in New York. Stockpiles in the U.S. increased for a 12th straight week, while European inventories rose the most in more than a year last week. This is weakening key physical market gauges. Swap prices indicate North Sea cargoes are at their biggest discounts to Brent futures in more than a decade. At some point, the market will have to start looking forward, Daniel Ghali, a TD Securities commodity strategist, said by phone. The OPEC cuts are going to be implemented, and also U.S. producers will have to reduce their output. Our expectation is we will start to see the market tightening as early as June. In talks with OPEC Plus, the U.S., Canada, and Brazil estimated their production will drop by a combined 3.1 million barrels a day. Last week's decline should help alleviate any concerns from OPEC Plus that the U.S. isn't doing its part. Brian Kessens, portfolio manager at Tortoise, said by phone. From the Odessa American, here is To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach for Friday, April 17th. Blood infection and pacemaker. Dear Dr. Roach, My son had a pacemaker placed in 2013 and got it checked every 4 months. He developed an ulcer on his coccyx. He was being seen every 2 or 3 weeks in a wound clinic, and I was told it was 98% healed. The visiting nurse came between visits to the doctor and sent him to the emergency room because of a bad odor. The ER said he had a wound and blood infection. Because he had a pacemaker, they said they would check it. It was checked a week later, and he died 2 days after that. I was told he died because his pacemaker wires were infected. Should someone have caught this problem? I'm thinking my son died due to a medical error. Answer: I am very sorry about your son. I don't have enough information to say for sure a medical error was responsible for his death. However, the story is concerning. An ulcer on the sacrum is usually a sign of debility and immobility, which puts a person at risk for medical complications. If the wound was deeper than the doctors realized, it could have led to a bacteremia, that is, bacteria in the blood. People with any kind of medical hardware need to be very concerned about bacteremia, since no matter how well the device is put in, it is at risk for being infected, what we call seeded, by the bacteria. Bacteria can go anywhere blood goes. Infection around a pacer wire is extremely serious and usually requires surgical removal of the infection, which in turn requires great expertise. A week seems too long, especially in hindsight, to let the pacemaker leads go without evaluation. I'm publishing your letter in hopes that other people in a situation like your son's know to get prompt evaluation of any hardware they have that is in contact with blood, such as a pacemaker or automated implantable cardioverter defibrillator in a situation of bacteremia, blood infection. Dear Abby, for Friday, April 17th. Son won't accept mom's new relationship with old friend. Dear Abby, I was married for more than 20 years and am recently divorced. I should have done it years ago, but my son Nicky begged me not to. He's 22. I am now dating a gentleman, Clyde, and am very happy to be in this relationship. Clyde treats me like a queen. I have known him longer than I've known my ex-husband. He and his family, including his ex-wife, are close friends. Before we started dating, Clyde called my ex, told him we were going to start seeing each other, and that he wanted my ex to hear it from him, not through the rumor mill. My ex said he was fine with it and thanked him for letting him know. We then informed Clyde's kids and my son. Everyone was fine with it, except Nicky. He's upset that we started dating 3 months after my divorce. Mind you, my marriage to Nicky's father was over years ago. Clyde had nothing to do with it. Now my son has an attitude with Clyde. He hardly speaks to him and never spends time with us. I have always been there for Nicky. His actions hurt. He can't seem to accept that I'm happy and that Clyde and I are more than friends now. Before we started dating, Nicky and Clyde had a good relationship. How do I get my son to come around? Second Chance in Michigan. Dear Second Chance, Nicky may be hoping that you and his father might one day reconcile and regard Clyde as an interloper. Explain to him that the divorce may seem recent to him, but for you and his dad, it was the final step in disengaging from a marriage that had been over for years. Tell him that you love him and you are sorry he is upset, but it's no excuse for treating Clyde badly, and you expect him to treat Clyde with respect, if not affection. Then go on and enjoy your life, because you deserve it. Dear Abby, my children attend a school where they are in 3 different buildings. One is in high school, one is in middle school, and the youngest is in elementary. Recently, the married elementary school principal had an affair with a married teacher's assistant. A few years before, the married middle school principal had an affair with a married teacher. My concern is that the administration knows about this but does nothing about it. I have addressed them with my concerns. I believe there was an abuse of power. If they are willing to sweep this under the rug, what else have they swept? Should I mind my own business or pursue the issue further? Mom on patrol in New York. Dear Mom, because of the litigious environment we live in, many businesses and educational institutions have policies that discourage fraternization. What you consider an abuse of power may be a relationship between consenting adults. You say you have brought this to the attention of the school administration. I think you have done enough. From now on, stay out of this unless you have absolute proof there is coercion involved.
Jacqueline Bigger's Stars. Note: Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Aquarius until 2:29 p.m., when the moon enters Pisces. Happy birthday for Friday, April 17, 2020. With serious purpose, you expect to be listened to, and this year you are not disappointed. You may change your mind in your career direction, but even with added pressures, you do well. A turn for the better in your fortune is likely. If single, you meet someone new and become a couple very quickly. If attached, do not be critical. Your partner needs extra reassurance now. Pisces is way sensitive and vulnerable. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Long-standing communication problems with a child or romantic interest can be overcome today. Talk and listen openly and honestly, and give plenty of time for what needs to be said. The result of this is a deep sense of connectedness. Bravo. Tonight, early bedtime. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Kindness and patience are of the utmost importance today. Be on guard and avoid repeating patterns. A past life connection with a social group you are dealing with is being played out. Reflect on karmic connections in order to facilitate trust and acceptance. Tonight, relax. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. You might enjoy experimenting with new forms of meditation and prayer today. Too much ritual and formality will generate restlessness for Gemini. Keep incantations short. A light heart sings a sweet song. Tonight, the gods and goddesses are apt to respond to humor and novelty. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. A new perspective regarding challenging situations develops today. This is good for talking through problems and finding answers. Be a good listener. Honesty and ethical behavior provide the standards for success. Tonight, talk with a friend who lives a long ways away from you. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Today, charming and eloquent companions go out of their way to include you in their plans. A telepathic exchange can even occur, providing a deeper glimpse into the heart and mind of a partner. Tonight, go over financial strategies as sources of security are shifting. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Do not lose focus today. Dissipating precious energy will end in frustration. You enjoy the peace and beauty of nature. Performing an act of kindness for one who is ill will bring a personal blessing. Tonight, intimate date night, even if virtual. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Today will be exciting, but extremely hectic. Don't become overwhelmed. It is all good news. Lovers offer valuable information. Stay centered with your daily session of relaxation techniques. Tonight, take care of your body and honor it as a temple of spirit. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Ask elders for guidance. Delve into your family's heritage. Set aside a corner of your home to create a personal altar. Decorate it with a familiar keepsake. A great deal of spiritual understanding will follow, which you will find comforting. Tonight, chat with friends. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Social prospects are happy today. An existing relationship can strengthen or a new one develops. A talented and well-mannered person includes you in plans and invitations. Make sure you spare time for a child who needs your attention. Tonight, online retail therapy. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Today brings helpful guidance from friends, so seek an opinion or request advice. You will feel like keeping to yourself, but if you do this, you will advance. There is an urge to contribute on a professional level. Take time to relax. Tonight, be yourself. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. Today is your day. You especially enjoy exchanging notes with a new prospect who has suddenly caught your eye. A degree of freedom in a committed situation is essential to your happiness, so make sure this prospect is independently minded. Tonight, as you like it. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. You gain a deeper awareness of who you are and what your life means today. Prepare for secrets to come to light. You might even get a glimpse into the motivations of others as well as a message from the spirit world. Tonight, show off. Born today, financier J.P. Morgan, 1837, writer Thornton Wilder, 1897, actress Jennifer Garner, 1972.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.